and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on romantic comedies. I'm Kayla, and I am here with my co-host,
Owen Wilson. That's me.
Wow.
I'm back. Thanks for having me on Secondhand Film Critics, guys.
Wow.
My favorite podcast.
I wish Owen Wilson was actually on our podcast.
He would be like, this is my first time on Secondhand Film Critics. That was a reference to the Marvel Loki interview that he did, for those of you out there that do not know. Yeah, well, we're talking about Marry Me today, which is why I opened with Owen Wilson.
Yes.
My best Owen Wilson impression.
Yes.
I think before we do that, though, let's just jump right into it this week with our answers to last week's question of the week, which was talking about another favorite genre of ours, which are high school comedies. We asked you, what is your favorite high school comedy, which is a big question.
There's and a lot of good ones.
There are. And we got a lot of varied responses, which is cool.
Yeah. So Joe Miller said Sing Street. Which is definitely a little more niche, I think, than kind of one of the more popular. But it is a good one. I've seen it. And
it's very good. It's a great movie. Some good music, too. We got a few answers on Instagram as well. That one was through Spotify. So thank you, Joe, for using Spotify, because we always like to incorporate different ways to get answers. But Instagram, we got Zach Smith Michaels with 21 Jump Street, which is the movie we did actually talk about in that episode. So that's funny. We got Dan, he said Fired Up, which is his biggest guilty pleasure.
I
feel like a lot of them are guilty pleasures.
I don't even know what that is.
Is it about pottery?
Fired Up? I'm sure it's about firefighters.
The high school firefighter department?
Nope. Here's the synopsis. Okay. Two guys, 300 girls, you do the math.
So 100 girls for each guy.
No, it would be 150 girls for each guy, because there's only two guys.
Oh, there's 900? Oh, there's only two guys. I thought they said three guys.
Two guys, 300 girls. So it would be 150 per guy.
Obviously, I can't do
that. It's a high school. The two guys, instead of going to football camp, go to cheerleading camp. So,
oh, interesting.
It's on HBO Max. Maybe I'll watch it.
HBO Max has been killing it recently, got to say. Another high school comedy in that kind of vein is Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is what Carly said. I watched that more recently, actually.
I actually haven't seen that one.
Last year. Wow. I don't know if you would like it. It doesn't really seem like what you would like, but I don't know.
You never know.
Maybe.
I trust you to know, though, if I would like it or not.
I mean, you might enjoy it. I wouldn't say would be your favorite, though. Maybe that's a good way to put it. And then Mike said The Girl Next Door, which I also don't know what that is.
I have no idea what that is. Wow, people really came in with the niche picks on this one.
I know, really, for real. I thought we were going to get like 16 Candles or something.
Is it about a girl who lives next door?
I would think so. But
yes, you know, a high schooler falls in love with his gorgeous 19-year-old neighbor.
19-year-old neighbor? Okay. That's not bad. I was assuming it might be like that one. Remember that one with Jennifer Lopez where it's like she was like 40-something years old? That came out like 5 years ago. There's one with her where like it was like a 20-year-old guy and she was like 45 or something.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
She lived next door. Let's see. Jennifer Lopez next door movie.
I have no...
I spelled a lot of that wrong.
No idea what you're talking about.
That one is called The Boy Next Door. When a handsome, charming teenager named Noah moves in next door, newly separated high school teacher Claire Peterson encourages his friendship and engages in a little bit of harmless, or so she thinks, flirtation. Although Noah spends much of the time hanging out with Claire's son, the teen's attraction to her is palpable. One night, Claire gives in to temptation and lets Noah seduce her. But when she tries to end the relationship, he turns violent. Yeah, so that's the one I thought that Mike was saying, and I was like, okay, interesting choice, but I'm glad it wasn't this one.
Yikes. Everything about that, like, makes me have a viscerally angry reaction.
It is an erotic thriller, so I guess
I don't think it's supposed to be like a comedy. Like, it's not supposed to be a positive thing, but like, still,
it's still a little bit
very weird. Very much should probably not have been made, but it is what it is.
Some kind of like another Jennifer Lopez movie that shouldn't have been made that we will be talking about today. just joking.
All right.
Before we get to that, though, we're going to just have a quick discussion on regular, just old rom-coms.
Yes, I have just a brief, very, very brief history that I wrote in five minutes for you. So rom-coms, wait, are you looking at it right now?
I have it on screen. I won't read it.
Okay,
though, if you don't
so
want me
do
to.
You know who wrote the first kind of rom-com or like sort of romantic comedy structured story?
Shakespeare.
He did. Yes, it was Shakespeare. So
Shakespeare did it all, you know.
Merchant of Venice is kind of like the first structure, like the one people kind of credit as a structured rom-com. Obviously, he has, you know, Romeo and Juliet, which is very romantic tragedy comedy. And Midsummer Night's Dream. So a lot of his are tragedy, comedy, whatever you call that. His kind of started, and then, you know, we get into films where stuff is translating from theater to the screen. And the first rom-com, or the first movie that is credited as a rom-com, is Sherlock Jr.
I love that movie. Yeah. That's a great movie.
Great movie. So that's in the silent film era. If you've watched silent films, a lot of those, whether or not it's like a romance movie, there's usually a romantic plot in it. So a lot of Buster Keaton films, or Charlie Chaplin films, there's usually kind of a romantic interest that is taking place, and the guy's kind of being a fool and trying to catch the attention of the pretty woman. So they're very early on. Romance is centered in movies, which makes sense. And then in the 30s, once film transitioned from silent film to the talkies, the kind of big major one was It Happened One Night, starring Clark Gable, which won Best Picture in, I think, 1935, something like that. That was kind of like the first big major talkie, like actual romantic comedy, like something that was meant to be very funny and humorous, but also have elements of kind of a romance story in it. And then once we got into the 40s and 50s, we got a lot of screwball comedies. So The Apartment, His Girl Friday, a lot of those like Cary Grant movies specifically was a big star of those. Jimmy Stewart kind of starred in some of those as well as supporting or a lead. So there's a lot of those. Philadelphia Story is another big one.
Yeah, that's like the biggest one I think of during
Bringing
that era.
Up Baby. So there's a lot of those that were kind of right in that. And this happened a lot because if you're familiar with the Hays Code at all, the Hays Code was kind of prevalent in early Hollywood, which prevented a lot of sexual content from happening. So a lot of the movies were very, like, kind of dumbed down in romance. Like, that's why they had to fall on that screwball comedy type style, because they couldn't really do a whole ton of sexual tension and stuff in those, like we would see in the 60s and 70s.
I gotta say, the apartment has a lot of sexual tension.
It does. And
so that's from 1960, so it's like right on the edge.
Yeah, so once the Hays Code kind of started being scrapped and more stuff was getting through and sex and love was able to be more openly talked about on screen in, you know, not just a very vague and implied way, we got very like sex-driven romance movies in the 60s and 70s. So a lot of these there are romantic comedies at this time. But it wasn't necessarily, it was a very transitional period for romance movies. And then once we got into the 80s and 90s, that's really where a lot of the romantic comedies we see today kind of stem from, is that sort of fun relationship with added sexual tension, but there's a lot of like giddiness and a more emotional side of romance combined with the humor elements. So definitely a more broad scope of approaching the romantic comedy instead of, you know, specific subsets of romance. You kind of get it all now in a romance movie, depending on the rating of the movie, obviously with PG and PG-13, you're only getting implied sexual content. With rated R movies, you know, who knows what you're going to get. Yeah, so that's kind of the brief history, very brief history of the timeline of the romantic comedy.
Hmm, interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of different styles and types of romantic comedies, and like looking at what romantic comedies come from which time, I think, is a good representation of the society's views on sexual politics and usually just women in society. And it's like, it's a really interesting to like look at different rom-coms and then compare them to the time in which they were written, because they're so mainstream too, so like they're supposed to appeal to everyone.
Definitely. Now we can just kind of talk about maybe what we like about rom-coms and some of the rom-coms that we like briefly before we get into our review. So for you, what makes a good rom-com movie? What is it that you like in a rom-com? Because I know you're not... I'm a big rom-com fan. I think this has been very clear if you're a regular listener of the podcast. Am I really? I watch a multitude of Hallmark movies. So I'm curious what it is that you like, because I know you like maybe a little bit more refined romance, or how would you describe it?
I don't know, like, as long as I am invested in the romance between the two leads, I really don't care. I think that's really where, like, just if I don't care about the romance and the, then I just don't care about the story. So what really makes a good rom-com for me is I need the two leads to have good chemistry together. Because if they have good chemistry and I'm rooting for them, then a movie can get away with a lot, you know? I think that's true in a lot of stuff, where like if you care a lot about the characters, then the movie can get away with a lot more. But I think it's even more prevalent in rom-coms, because that's really what's driving the entire story, is the like the will they, won't they.
Yeah, usually there's not as much substance in the plot.
Yeah.
So really you have to have good leads for it to really do anything worthwhile.
Right, good leads and good dialogue too, like between them. And I just like, I like them to also just have a good sense of character in themselves as well.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times movies can either lean too much on one of them, or they both feel like kind of easily, like they were like kind of made for each other on paper, like a little too much, where it's like, obviously this is supposed to be what this guy's supposed to compliment this person. I don't know. So I also like it to have that sense of individuality to each of the characters as well, so it feels more real, rather than, I think in Hallmark movies it can really feel very manufactured, because like obviously there's a thing like, oh, obviously this is the person who we want her to get together with, because this is like obviously who they wrote this character for, and this, she's not a real character without this person, if that makes sense, you know. So that's another good point, where like I'd like them to be full characters on their own, rather than, because I think that can also lead into bad messaging, where like you're not a real person without a significant other to like complete you, which I think you can find in a lot of like kids or old Disney movies for kids.
Yeah, definitely.
That feeling too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I definitely give much more grace than I think you do, because I'm like, whatever. I do think there are superior romance movies, like movies that are clearly much better than other ones. Like, I mean, When Harry Met Sally, for instance, is like a very well-made movie, whether or not it's a rom-com. And then, like, you know, there's other, like, really, really stupid ones. But it's like, I love watching all of them. So, you know, I can definitely recognize that there are better ones in the genre. But I'm, you know, I don't make too much of a distinction. I'm kind of just like, let me have them all. And if they're dumb, they're dumb, and I will probably like them anyway, I guess.
Well, it's nice that they're usually pretty easy watches, too. So it's like, it doesn't ever really feel like if you watch one, then you, like, wasted a lot of time, because they never really feel like much of a chore to get through, even if you don't like them, which is, I think, to their benefit, because there are a lot of rom-coms where I've seen where it's like, that was not great. but it doesn't feel as much like if I had sat down and watched a more dramatic movie, and that would feel maybe more like disappointing, because I don't know. I just think that rom-coms are easier to watch even when they're not great.
Yeah, there's a certain level of expectation that comes with a rom-com. So obviously when you're going in, you can definitely come out like you're saying, because you're not really expecting it to be the greatest movie. So you're not feeling like you're wasting time after, because you didn't expect it to be a 5-star anyway. You're probably really only expecting it to be a 3-star at the most if it's just a casual rom-com.
Right, like no one's going into a rom-com thinking like, this is going to be the next Citizen Kane right now. Like, you're watching a rom-com because you want to laugh.
Yeah,
because
it's feel good.
To be like invested
They're
in a romance.
They're definitely like comfort films that most of the time that I turn on rom-coms is when I want just a casual comfort film.
Yeah, I think it's like the natural progression of when you're a kid and you watch like kids movies, you know, animated movies that are like made for kids that are just supposed to be fun, or like something like Spy Kids, or I don't know, those kind of movies when you're a kid. This is like the adult equivalent, because you're not going in expecting an amazing like feature film, but you're just watching them because you like them and they are fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think like you can maybe say that's about all comedies, but I think there in comedy, there's a lot more wiggle room, just like in the general comedy, because you can make more high concept comedies. And there are comedies I've seen where it's like, this isn't funny at all, so this is a waste of time. Because if it's straight comedy, then you're relying a lot more on the humor than the relationships.
Sure.
What are some of your like top tier favorite rom-coms that are your go-tos?
I've got quite a few.
I see that. Yes.
Many. I have many go-tos, but my main go-tos. My number one is 13 Going on 30. I can pop that on at any time, pretty much. Usually, if you see me watching it on, like, I logged it a lot on Letterboxd in 2020, I think, because that was just like a bad year, and so I.
No, it was a great. What are you talking about? What was wrong with 2020?
And
there was a great year.
Like, I don't know. It's just one of those things that's like, for me, is a very like de-stressing movie. Like, you can kind of just watch it and kind of all your stress sort of sinks out of your body, which I can appreciate. So that's kind of my main one. Another one of my favorites is While You Were Sleeping. I think people try to redo this plot all the time. There's like a Hallmark movie every year that has this plot, or more than one. And I feel like it's never as good. But that movie, because it's so like winter-centered, definitely is one that I don't usually watch year-round. But, you know, I still really like that one. Pride and Prejudice, of course, the 2005 one with Keira Knightley. I think it was 2005. That one is...
I think it was,
iconic, obviously. 10 Things I Hate About You, I really like. Princess Diaries 2... definitely would be one
movie.
With Chris Pine.
We gotta do a whole episode on both of them.
I agree.
I think, like, as we've talked like 3 times about them a little bit,
yes.
But we just gotta do a
I
whole
saw
episode.
Princess
Childhood
Diaries
classics.
2 in the movie theater and had I have a movie theater experience for that.
You got to see Julie Andrews sliding on a mattress
in
like,
the theater. Oh
in
my god.
Big
it was for like a birthday
HD
party,
screen.
I think. I went to someone's birthday party to see it.
That's a great birthday party movie. Because that's like the best scene is the birthday party.
Yeah, let's see. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Sleepless in Seattle. You know, and then I like a lot of older movies as well, like It Happened One Night and, you know, Philadelphia Story and stuff like that. But definitely modern rom-coms are sort of my cup of tea.
Right, and you watch, like we said, all the Hallmark ones too.
Yes,
like you love those as well, which
I
are
do.
Like almost a different genre because they're like a version of the rom com.
Yeah, they're so short.
They're
and
a
structured.
Lot more toned down too because they're like for a completely different audience than like While You Were Sleeping.
Yeah, TV family audience.
Yeah, yeah. I think I like a lot of the ones that you cited. I think that all of them have like a very distinct like feel good feeling to them. You already mentioned When Harry Met Sally. That's probably like my favorite rom-com.
Yeah,
I really like The Apartment as well, which we've already talked about. Trying to think. It's like I like a lot of movies with rom-com elements that I wouldn't necessarily call rom-com, so it's a little tricky. Like, I think Before Sunrise is, like, it has elements of rom-com in it, but I don't think it really should would qualify as one. I do like a lot of older ones. One that I like a lot is Holiday with Cary Grant, which I don't think a lot of people talk about. Because, like, I think people... It's one of those with Cary Grant where, like, you have the main three or four you always talk about. Yeah. And all the other ones kind of, like, get grouped together. So that one is really good. I would recommend that to pretty much anyone. La La Land, you know, that's a rom-com, I think.
Sure.
High School Musical is a rom-com.
Of course, to me.
So I think we need to just make sure we talk about, we mentioned that one.
You like that Christmas one, that like random Christmas one about the heart.
Oh, Last Christmas?
Yeah,
that's a great movie. That one is good. That is like a very modern like rom-com.
Yes,
that kind of that movie. That's why I think I like that one, because it felt... even a little bit like a throwback, I guess. So maybe like more 2010 style rom-com.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Cause I think that's a nice era. A lot of like 80s ones, obviously. I think I don't like 16 Candles at all, but I like Pretty in Pink. And I think that one doesn't get talked about a lot.
Princess Bride, you like?
I do like Princess Bride. Clueless. We didn't say Clueless. Aww. Though I think like, the romance at the center of Clueless is maybe my least favorite part of it, but I think it's still fun. So yeah, there's a lot out there.
There's plenty of great ones and a lot that you can rewatch. Like rom-coms just have a really good rewatchability to them, which is something that I can appreciate as well. And there's so many more that I like.
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia's great. I love Leap Year personally. I know that a lot of people think that movie's dumb. I don't care. It's great. It's in Ireland and it has Matthew Good in it. I think for me, like genres that I like, you know, I'm very into like film noir, kind of that style. Mm. And then I'm also into like, you know, I maybe combine that with heist films and then documentaries. And then I would say rom-coms. Those would be like my top three, like documentaries, heist films, rom-coms.
I think Palm Springs is also one that came out recently that is like a good example of a more recent rom-com that I wish there was more of.
Yeah, definitely.
Know? And one of those like a high concept too, because that's another like subgenre. Like a subgenre. I think 13 Going on 30 is kind of like that as well, where like you have that hook to it, which I think sometimes is nice to keep you a little more engaged than like with the Hallmark movie. It's always very set in the real world. I like sometimes adding in those concepts.
There hasn't been a rom-com recently that I've been like that I've really liked compared to older ones, because obviously like I watch a lot of the dumb Netflix ones like To All the Boys and whatever other kind of
I like
random
the first one of those. I think the
out.
First To All the Boys was like a good example.
Yeah, but it's not one that I'm like, you know, rewatching or putting up there with like 13 Going on 30. Like, I definitely like, I hope that eventually another one will come out that I'm like, oh yes, gotta add this to the docket of like movies that I can rewatch.
Yeah, I know you didn't like Happiest Season. I think that was one for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And also that was an interesting thing because like you said, we don't get a lot of rom-coms. So I think the discussion around that movie and like how much people were talking about it is a sign that like people really do like rom-coms and they do have a lot of like relevance in the culture if you allow them to. I think that's one thing where like studios don't think that they're worth as much because it's like, oh, there's no superheroes. There's no cool things.
Oh my God. But this cycle in Hollywood happens all the time where they underestimate the female viewer, and it's like women have proved time and time again they will pay money for these movies. Like, just keep making them. But studios continually, because they're run by men,
they keep forgetting.
Like every couple years they forget, and then a massive hit comes out that makes, you know, millions of dollars, and they're like, oh my God, wait, women go to movies too? I mean, like, we saw this with Titanic, Twilight, which we both
listened to that podcast
which talks about that. I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
the big hit show. Yeah. It was like, because they're doing like, it was like the first season of that show. It's very good. I would recommend
anyone.
Yeah,
and that's one thing they talked about definitely is underestimating the female viewers. Like, they were shocked that women bought tickets to go see Twilight. And it's like, come on.
Why are you? Yeah.
And like, I feel like this happens. Like, I mean, people were, even then, were shocked with 50 Shades of Grey. It's like, what? People wanted to go see this? And it's like, oh my God. Like, this has been happening for literal decades where this massive movie comes. I mean, Titanic is one of the highest grossing films of all time. And it's like, that was women driven sales because they wanted to go see Leo. Like, it just is like, this is a very big market, and I don't think studios are capitalizing on it enough. I don't know. I just think that if they were to make a stupid rom-com, like, you know, one we've had in the past, not like the ones they're making, not like this one that we're going to talk about here. Yeah. But like, if they made a stupid rom-com with, like, Sebastian Stan and, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, a popular female actress. Florence Pugh, I don't know. But
what,
like,
about they just get Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie, like, and they don't reference Falcon Winter Soldier, but it's like they know that people want that,
but
so
it's
that's
like
their version of it.
They
That'd
need
be so
to just
great.
Pick someone like that, because I think they think that rom-coms are below these kind of like big-name actors, which is not true, because a lot of big-name actors have been in rom-coms. And so it's
like we said, it's Philadelphia Story was like one of the biggest casts of all time, and those are the great stars.
Biggest movies for sure were those rom-coms in the 40s and 50s were some of the top grossing films of those years. And then, you know, you think of, I don't know, like stuff like, I mean, Mark Ruffalo, he's an Avenger and he was in 13 going on 30.
Well, you look at a lot of these and it's like a lot of actors now, like their first movies were rom-coms, like 13 going on 30, While You Were Sleeping, Clueless. Like, there's
I would watch another Mark Ruffalo rom-com. If you put Mark Ruffalo in a rom-com,
Paul Rudd.
Now, Paul Rudd. Oh my God, I would.
He's an Avenger.
I love Paul Rudd. Yeah, it's just like I just wish that studios would capitalize on the rom-com more, because one, I love them and I want to see more rom-coms every year, but also like I want to see good rom-coms. Where's the When Harry Met Sally of today? Like, where is it? I want to see it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and it's interesting because When Harry Met Sally references Casablanca, which is like one of the biggest rom-coms.
Sure.
So it's like, I think now you could, that's like, it's been farther since when Harry Met Sally was made. Casablanca was more recent than if they made a movie now and they referenced When Harry Met Sally. So it's like, it's been enough time where like you can make another one and reference that as a reference point, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think with Spider-Man, like, that's always the highest grossing superhero movies. And Spider-Man movies are consistently just rom-coms.
I mean, if you watch TikTok like, edits of Amazing Spider-Man, it's all just Andrew and Emma. Like
that's the only reason people go, is because that Spider-Man movies are romantic comedies.
Yeah.
I mean, Spider-Man 2 is a romantic comedy. Like,
I would agree.
Very obviously. So I think that's just another sign where, like, even though it's a superhero movie, you know, just look at it a little closer.
I said this last week, or I don't know if you put it in the episode, but there was this movie, and then The Lost City is also coming out with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum. Mm. And
yeah,
I think
right.
we are kind of post-COVID, we'll be able to see this. I'm predicting that we're going to start leaning into this kind of genre more. Of kind of just goofy comedy, like pre-2010 comedies that we would get, because it feels that way with movies that are coming out. And I feel like a post-COVID era, it makes sense, because while dramas and, you know, all that will still be made and will still be good, I do think there's going to be a sort of renaissance of people wanting this kind of movie that's just for shits and giggles, and you go and you have a good time. I think that our, you know, collective of people need that. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff that people want to make, is like, people don't want to sit in depressing stuff right now. Like, a lot of times for me personally, I choose to put on a happy movie because I'm like, I'm tired of being sad and depressed and having drama in my own life right now. Like, I just want to watch these two people have a good time.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to see more of that. And that's obviously also a response to, like, the political situation as well.
Yeah.
Because whenever there's, like, very centrist politicians in office, filmmakers feel like they shouldn't make political movies anymore. So I think that's also kind of a thing where it's be like, yeah, everything's good now, guys.
Yeah,
let's
right.
do some fun stuff. And then next time people actually end up realizing that the political situation in America is terrible, they'll be like, we need to make more political movies now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's never changed. But I do think we're going to see more. Like, this time next year, we'll probably be able to see it more clearly with some of the releases that are coming up. But let's talk about this one.
Yeah.
Because this is, I think, one of the first. I think the 355 is actually also a good example, because that's, like, a very awful, like, ensemble movie that no one saw, where it's like, that's also a very 2008-9 thing. But this is Marry Me, which released simultaneously in theaters and on Peacock, which
yes.
is a cool that they did that, because there's, like, obviously right now is not everyone wants to go out to the theater, and this feels like a very stay at your own house and watch this on Valentine's weekend movie.
Yeah, definitely.
This is, I was surprised, I didn't know this until the credits, that this is based on a graphic novel.
I didn't know that either.
By Bobby Crosby, which came out, like, pretty recently. I think it was, like, 2020 it came out, I saw, or something.
Wow.
So,
fast turnaround.
Pretty interesting. And it's, like, really interesting, like, to look at, because I looked it up on Amazon, and there's, like, some of the frames are in there. And it's, like, not what you would expect. Like, it's a very stylized art style, like a graphic novel. So it's interesting that they looked at that, and then they made this, which is a very more classic romantic comedy that's not very stylized, because romantic comedies aren't really very stylized most of the time.
Right.
This was going to release last year, February 12th.
Wow.
Then they delayed it till May, which is another, like, if I was going to think of another time than Valentine's Day, I think May would probably be a good time for this.
In the spring.
But then they moved it. I don't know why. It's just on Wikipedia said a shift in the release schedule. Maybe Universal, the distributors, had another movie in May.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to February 11th, which was a few days ago. So I think it was the right call to put it back to
Valentine's Day. I definitely agree.
Do you know they spent $15 million on television commercials for this?
You know, okay, so I was surprised at this at first when I first read it. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, you know what? This does not surprise me at all, because I have been, and I know Peacock is their own service, but I have been binge-watching through Modern Family on Peacock for the past month or so. And every commercial break, they play a teaser for this. I have seen the teaser for this probably 200 times. Because I've watched through 9 seasons of Modern Family now. So that's like over 100 episodes. And if you think it plays every single commercial break. But it's always like, they just do the, marry me, marry me, marry me,
marry me, marry me.
And then they play the line where he says, well, call me if you're lonely. And then she calls and she's like, he's like, what? And she's like, I'm lonely. They play that clip in a teaser. Yeah, so that does not surprise me that they spent this much money on advertising.
So far, over the weekend, it made $8 million, which
wow.
is not bad. It has a $23 million budget. So I think it will probably, like, just make its money back. And I don't think really Peacock probably cut into it too much.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, like, I feel like right now, I mean, what, Uncharted also came out, and Death on the Nile is in the theaters.
Uncharted is next week, actually.
Oh, okay.
Death on the Nile did come out this week, though, you're right.
Yeah, so I feel like, I don't know, most people, if they're choosing between Death on the Nile and Marry Me, would probably lean towards Death on the Nile.
Yeah,
because it seems more generic, but... Yeah, I know a lot of people who watch this on Peacock. I watched it on Peacock.
Same, yeah. Do you think that like, affected your experience? Like, I don't... Because for me, like, I actually preferred watching this on Peacock.
Yes.
I think it would have... Like, it didn't feel like a theater release
to me. I'll say this type of movie, I probably would have gone and seen it in the theater if it was not on Peacock, just because I like Owen Wilson, and I like a good rom-com.
I would have seen it.
But also, I think I prefer this in the at-home setting, because rom-coms to me feel very much like couch movies. Like, you put on a sweater and sweats, and you grab a blanket, and maybe you grab a nice little snack and a cup of tea, and you can sit down and watch the movie. They're supposed to be kind of cozy-feeling comfort movies, and you don't get that same level of cozy comfort in a movie theater as you do on your living room couch.
Definitely. And I think, like, there isn't that higher concept hook in this one. And so I think that, like, that's something that feels more movie theater-y, where this is very much like, we'll get into it. This feels more just like a Hallmark movie to me, with, like, a PG-13 rating. So I agree that I think the at-home experience is what I would have actually preferred. So I'm glad that they put it on Peacock.
Yeah. You didn't like this at all.
I did not.
I liked it more originally right when I finished watching it. And then I thought about it more, and the more I thought about it, the more I didn't like it. That was kind of my, like, once I sat with it more, I was like, did that really make me feel good? I don't think so. So I originally gave it a 3.
I saw that,
I think I would probably lower my rating to a 2.
Okay.
At this point.
Wow, a whole star.
Damn. Yeah, I think I would pull it down a whole star. Just because, like, you know, when I'm, like, after I watch 13 going on 30... That's kind of my bar, you know, even though that's a very high bar.
Yeah, great.
Like,
it's a good bar, though.
I don't know. Like, when I finish that movie, I feel really good. And, like, you know, I'm like, man, I either, like, want to be in love with these people or, like, be friends with these people. And, like, I'm really happy for them. And this movie, like, I don't know. Like, I think I kind of got caught up in it. But when I was done, I wasn't like, oh, man, I'm so happy they're together. Like, because in 13 great, going on 30, exactly, when, like, he's about to get married to someone else, and she's standing there with the dollhouse, and he's like, I wish, like, we would have been able to reconnect sooner. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're like crying. Like, you're like, this is the worst thing that would have happened.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly. That's my biggest thing. Like, there's a lot of issues I have with this movie, but like I said at the beginning, if I like the main two characters and I want them to be together, then I really can forgive a lot. But I really did not care about either of them, and I didn't feel like they had any chemistry, which made me not want them. Like, I didn't care that they were together or not.
Yeah.
Like, in the scene, full spoilers right now, in the scene where he breaks up with her on like, the rooftop.
Oh, my God.
I was like,
that is the worst scene in the whole movie.
I mean, it makes sense to me. Like, sure, I feel like the movie could end right now.
Yeah,
because
that, and I love Owen Wilson, but, like, I don't know. I feel like they didn't utilize him right in this movie.
He made, like, 2 jokes, maybe?
Yeah,
like actual jokes?
He's so funny, and he's a good actor, and, like, I think he can be attractive. In Loki.
He wasn't very attractive
in
this
Loki,
movie, gotta
when
say.
He is playing Mobius, like, I think that he's attractive in that. Like, I think he looks
his character is
really
good
in Loki. I mean, yeah, but, like, even if his character isn't good, like, just, like, if you look at him on a poster, you're like, wow, Owen Wilson looks really good here. Like, with this
they
short,
made him look weird
almost,
in this. Like, he looked whack
well,
in this
Well, and
movie.
I think they were, like, trying to be like, oh, haha, like, he's a math teacher, he doesn't take care of himself. But, like, I just feel like, they just did him dirty, because I feel like he can be an attractive, and I do like I like Sebastian Stan, but I also think that, like, you can have a very not as conventional person, conventionally attractive person in a movie and still be like, like Luke Wilson, for example, in Legally Blonde, he's not super attractive in that movie, but you're like,
but he's just a nice
you're
guy.
Like, oh my God, Emmett. Like, I want to be with Emmett. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like...
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
They didn't utilize him properly in this to make him, like, you really like him. And I think J-Lo's fine. I don't think she's a great actress.
Yeah, did you see her in Hustlers? Because
I
think,
did.
Like, that was actually, like, I was pretty impressed with her in that. And this felt like kind of a step down.
I didn't think she was great in that. I thought that she definitely did a very good job. I've seen her in other rom-coms. The Wedding Planner, which is awful, by the way. That's one of my least favorite rom-coms. Because I hate infidelity plot lines. I'm pretty sure that was why I didn't like that one, is I think there was like some cheating going on. And gotcha. I can't do it. Yeah, I just think, I agree with you. That scene definitely was like, well, and it's so crazy because he has this big moment where he's watching her and you think his whole thing is going to be like, oh my God, I am in love with her. And like, I need to go like tell her and profess my love. Like, that's where I thought it was going, which is, that's the natural progression of the rom-com. But instead he goes and he's like, oh, the... we're not meant for each other.
You're too big of a star for me.
What the fuck are you talking about?
The thing was, that was his entire issue at before they got together. Like, why he didn't want to get together with her. And it felt like he got over that, and then he just reverted back to like, actually, no. We aren't the same anymore.
Yeah, it's very weird. There's just a lot of weird tonal issues. And I actually think... I could be wrong. I think a lot of the issue is the editing. I do think they tried to do some stylistic things with the phone screens and the live streams and all that, which I think...
Oh my gosh. Who live streams this much?
I think it's stupid, but I do think, like, I can give them a pass on that because I do think they tried to use their creative liberties to be like, oh, because she's a social media star... we can do this. I don't think it worked at all, but I can give them a pass on that. I do think a lot of the dialogue was just stitched together very poorly. Some of the scenes where, like the scene where they're in his apartment, both of the scenes in his apartment, the first one where they're just kind of talking, and then the second
great apartment
one
also.
After.
Like,
okay.
Good apartment.
If he's a math teacher,
well, that's what I was saying. Like, he couldn't afford
it,
but it looks nice.
He's affording that big of an apartment because this is what in Manhattan,
Manhattan.
I mean, a two-bedroom apartment. No way. There is absolutely no.
Well, I don't know. Also, like, how much his ex-wife makes? Because I like how much of the child support she's paying.
Yeah,
but he must be paying a lot of it if he can get that apartment. Like, he's got to be chipping in.
There's
quite
no
a bit.
Way he makes that much as a teacher, a math teacher.
No. No.
Yeah. So I guess like I just thought some of the editing, like the cuts were just really weird to me. The way they kept, I mean, some of the camera angles were bad too. But the way they kept making those cuts between. Her like assistant camera person, like her camera person's camera,
like,
and then the regular camera, and then the
so
live.
Bad.
It just was very strange to me the way this movie was cut together, and I think it definitely changed the tone of the movie a lot and made some scenes feel kind of rushed and didn't give space for the dialogue to breathe. But then the movie was also too long, and it was like a lot of the stuff could have been cut out and given more. Because I think if they had, like, given more time for some of the dialogue, then it could have been better to build their chemistry. I don't know. That's just one thing that I thought when I was watching it.
No, I agree with all of that. Cinematography choices were wild to have that random handheld footage just, like, shoved
in there.
And
also, like, they tried to differentiate between the handheld footage and the regular footage. And make the handheld footage look like less...
worse.
Yeah, which is weird to me because that's not the case now. Like, we live in 2022 and these camera people that work for professionals have really nice rigs. And I can't imagine that whatever camera he's shooting on would look that bad. It just was very strange to me.
It was real. He was bad at it. And, like, he had, like, a stabilizer. Like, it wouldn't have looked like...
It did. No. It
that
was
shaky.
Just,
And, it was not great. Also, the music, terrible music. It was basically just Hallmark movie music. Like, I was listening to it, and when they had, like, the little violins, like, do, like, it was, like, just Hallmark movie music. And I was like, what are they doing? Like...
I do think her song, like, when they did the ballad version of her song with Bastien and her singing.
I mean, it sounded, production was
fine. I thought
it
was fine.
I
think it was catchy, which is what matters in a movie like this. But I wasn't like, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing.
Well, first of all, I did not feel like this would be the number one song in the world. And second of all, if this was the number one song in the world, it wouldn't have just been nominated for pop vocal performance. It would have been nominated for record or song of the year. Like, if this is number one song, like, if this is as big of a deal as you're making it, it doesn't make sense why it just wouldn't be nominated for pop vocal performance.
Yes, yeah.
And all, yeah, the whole, like, element of her being a star and, like, them, I don't know. It felt both, at the same time, like, way bigger of a deal than it would be in real life. Like, the fact how big a star she was and how many people loved her. But also it felt like way less of a deal, if that makes sense. Like, it, they didn't have a good handle on how pop culture works in 2020. Because we don't really have stars like that anymore. That's like people doing Vitamix commercials, and like that doesn't feel like 2020.
It feels like 2015.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it didn't feel like they had a good grasp on.
Yeah, they should have had her doing culture. A Bang Energy. If she had done a Bang Energy ad, yeah. That would have been more believable.
What have been interesting is, because I know she's older and they were trying to do like the thing where the industry doesn't respect her as much. It would have been interesting if they had added in like an influencer plot line kind of thing where like she's being pushed out by influencers,
sure.
Which are like the new celebrities, because that's what it felt like. It felt like very old celebrity of her and the way they were treating her character. I felt like that too, and actually Don't Look Up, because with Ariana Grande's character and Kid Cudi's character, like the way that movies right now are portraying pop stars is not how pop stars are anymore.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, like that they're just, they feel out of touch with it.
Definitely.
Even the concert, like that looked like, I know it's COVID, which is probably a huge reason, but the concert looked like very small.
I thought that too, because they were blowing it. I mean, I know that they did like a live of it, which is where most of the people were watching, but they're like 20 million people. And then she's in like just a regular like club venue. Like it's like,
yeah, like not even a stadium.
It's not an arena or anything. And I know that that was probably like they just capacity with COVID and stuff weren't able to film, I don't know, parts of this. I don't know when this was filmed.
But again, Don't Look Up, they had a huge stadium show. They were able to make it feel like a full stadium concert, yeah, which I think is what they were saying. Like, she's that big of a star. CG'd
some of it. I don't know. Like, it's crazy to me because...
Some things weird.
Well, and that concert seems so dead. Like, if anyone has been to a concert, you know that, like, if you're in the pit, there's not any space to just stand there.
Yeah, you're not like, standing there just, like, with your sign.
You're definitely not sitting down. Like, he was sitting down at one point, and I was like, what? Have these people even ever been to a concert? Especially for, like, someone who's supposedly, like, at the same level as, like, I don't know, like, Billie Eilish? Or, like, that, like, someone who's a major pop star?
And they had Bastion during his song. They had, like, 20 girls, like, coming up right and touching him. And I'm like, this is not how concerts
is
work.
Very
there's
weird.
Like a 20-foot there's like a 20-foot barrier between stage and general admission.
Yeah, very strange.
It was interesting the way they decided to do the
I will say
angle.
One thing,
yeah.
I did like, I liked the kids in the math class. I thought that they were funny.
Yeah.
I love kids like that in movies, especially nerdy kids. I loved the mathletes.
It was a little bit like there was a couple lines where I cringed pretty hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where again, a little out of touch where, like, they're looking up stuff on their laptops, and it's just, like, I don't know. It felt a little bit like that the people that wrote this also just didn't really interact with kids very much. I don't know. I like the idea of that.
Sure.
And having it be kind of like a School of Rock thing. I would have rather them focus more on that.
Yeah.
And less on just her and Owen Wilson, because I think him and the kids were, like, the best aspect of the movie. Honestly, a whole movie with just Owen Wilson as a math teacher, like coaching these kids
to a math
without the rom-com element,
yeah,
would have been a pretty great movie, 100%. Like School of Rock style, but for math nerds,
I think
that would be great.
I'm totally down. I definitely think for me in the moment, like, I enjoyed watching this movie. Like, I wasn't, you know, super invested, but I wasn't not invested. And I think that, like, it's definitely one that you can throw on, maybe with a group of friends, maybe with your family, like, watching a movie night, just kind of throw it on and be like, oh, hearty har har, look at how funny this is. But I would probably never rewatch this, so I don't know that if it falls under that sort of rewatchability that I like in rom-coms, but I think it works in some ways and then really doesn't work in other ways. I wouldn't say it's the worst movie. I also watched Tall Girl 2, and that was considerably worse. So,
yeah, I did not watch Tall Girl 2. Yeah, I would not recommend this really at all. I really didn't like it. It was like, I was kind of invested in, like, I don't know, like, I was trying to pay attention in the beginning because I was excited for it. I was thinking it could be, like, at least a fun time. But by the end, I was, like, just so done with this movie, and I didn't care about any of the characters. And it was way too long, like, way too long for a movie like this. And I think there are just a lot better options if you want this kind of movie. Even stuff that, like, they release on Netflix, like, they release rom-coms on Netflix all the time. I would rather watch one of those. I don't know about Tall Girl 2, but, like, I'd rather watch something like that than this. This just felt, like, stuck in the past in a bad way. And also, they just didn't have a handle on any of the characters. So, yeah, did not love it. Also, here's the thing. If this is, like, a very obviously cheesy, they don't really care about, like, making this, like, a realistic, grounded movie. I mean, what pop star is going to propose to a random guy in the audience? I know they say that that's crazy, but it still would never happen. But if we're already this far in, just make them win the mathalon thing. Like, I don't need a realistic, like, message where, like, you still tried. Like, just make them win.
Yeah.
Like,
kids.
It's already so cheesy. Just give us what we want. That was another, like, there was this movie called The Long Shot, which was, like, a 2006, like, football movie, and about, I think it had Ice Cube in it, and he was, like, running the scrappy football team. And spoilers for The Long Shot, they lose in the final championship game. And I'm like, this is already, like, everyone watching this is not here for a realistic story. Just make them win.
Like, yeah, who cares if it's predictable? Like, that's what we're here for.
Right, you're not, like, making anyone, like, oh my word, they didn't even take the easy route. Like, no, I don't, take the easy route, please. But it is interesting that this did come out. Like, I think the fact that this did get made says a lot about maybe what studios are thinking of make, like you said, like, moving towards in movies and mainstream movies. And if this does well, like, if this makes
yeah,
his money
I
back,
do
I think
want
we could
them
see a lot more
to make more. So I'm like, at the same time, I'm like, this is bad, don't watch it. But I'm also like, do watch it, because we need to show studios if we want more of these. So
yeah, maybe I'll, like, use my Regal Unlimited subscription to, like, buy a seat, but I just won't go. But, like, it will still get the money. Just because I would like that. I would like to see more of this. Just, like, I think you can do this in a much better way, like I said. So yeah. Maybe they just keep doing it. This is, like, it just felt like they were a little rusty.
Yeah, we just need
on the
one
rom-coms,
to hit.
For sure. Yeah, I don't think this one is going to hit the pop culture consciousness,
no.
Like the Twitter sphere. This does not feel, like, very made for that. Yeah, any final thoughts before we get to the outro here?
No, let's roll into the outro.
All right. So our question of the week this week, then, is what is your favorite rom-com? So we gave you some of ours, so we want to hear some of yours. And if it's one of the ones we already mentioned, then that's fine. Just let us know.
Because those are all the best ones, obviously.
Yeah.
So
right, yeah. So it's got to be one of ours. Yeah, you can reach out to us with that on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're on all of those. Our website is also in the description down below. What else?
You can email us
Spotify,
at,
like we said,
handfilmcritics@gmail.com. But yeah, Spotify, you can also answer in the Q&A feature. You can just type in the answer. We can pin it and see
I mean, you can
it.
Type it in anywhere. But
yes,
we,
yes,
yeah, we
yes,
will
yes,
pin it on
yes,
Spotify,
yes.
though. If you do it on Spotify, we can pin it, and everyone listening can see your favorite rom-com. Which, you know, who doesn't want to be famous for their favorite rom-com?
Sure.
Kayla, what is our next episode?
We've got a big one. We've got the big fish, the big one of the sea. And that
the
is
the big fish
is not the movie The Big Fish, which is a great movie, by the way. But we'll be doing our secondhand film awards, which are superior to the Oscars.
Yes, the nominations for the Oscars just came out. And so, you know, we have to counter with our superior nominations.
This will be our third annual Secondhand Film Awards. So if you want to know what we've done in the past, you can definitely go listen to our first and second one. of the previous 2 years, but we've got some really good stuff for you. We've got all the main categories. We try to do some more niche films that aren't just, you know, the main Oscar bait films. And then
right. We
also have Best Dog, and we have maybe a new category, which is similar to Best Dog this year.
You know, we had to expand the horizons a little bit. You know?
So definitely tune in for that. We have Best Needle Drop. So we try to definitely like throw in some more fun categories in addition to all the main categories. So you don't want to miss it. There's some good stuff.
Yeah, we got to get in there and make our picks now because we have our whole list of all of our options.
I still need to watch a few movies.
But we got to pare it down a little bit. But yeah, I'm excited for that because that's always one of my favorite episodes we do because it's always very fun. So tune into that next Tuesday.
Yes.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla. And we're
your second-hand
film critics.